true outcomes they want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes, insightful baseball news underway. Want to win that score sheet? You're gonna want to stay with Three True Outcomes.
Howdy. Welcome to the Three True Outcomes Score Sheet Baseball Podcast, presented by Baseball Prospectus. I'm your host, Ian Lefkowitz, and I am experiencing Kartenfreude. That is the feeling you get when something bad happens to the St. Louis Cardinals. joining us, as always, from Livonia, Michigan, it is our hacking master, Ben Murphy. Ben, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm doing well.
Wonderful. And from our nation's capital, the feds have already traced his IP address. It's Jadwise.
Hello.
That was nice. I like that team. It's much
so
more
delicious.
It's much more relatable than some random pop culture thing that I don't get.
Oh, you're saying our sports podcast should focus on sports?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that okay. I enjoyed this particular instance when I knew the joke.
Oh, so it shouldn't be obscure to sports fans. I see. You're a perfectionist.
Okay. I'm pretty sure everyone that knows me would disagree that I'm not a perfectionist.
All right. Well, hello, everyone. It is great to have you once again. Thank you for choosing to fly this podcast. Made it so far into that sentence before realizing it did not have an end. So far. You can't back out. Anyway, it's great to be back. Everyone's doing well?
Fantastic. Yes.
Okay, wonderful. We have the gang back together. We are here to answer your questions, to talk about trading up and trading down. We hope everyone had a great round 40 draft and all drafted directly off of our lists after listening to our podcast. Now we have much less relevant advice, or relevant advice for very specific people. We are going to be doing our monthly, at this point, trade value podcast, where we talk about players who are worth trading for and trading away.
We should trademark this segment.
Oh. Okay. So you work on the IP law, and in the meantime, everyone else can email scoresheet@baseballperspectives.com with any questions that they have about the podcast or about your teams. We have a bunch of really good questions this week, don't we, Mailbag Captain?
Yes, we do. Do you want to get to them? Or
yeah, do you want to share that? Or well, oh. You know what? Don't. I think the silence speaks for itself.
I mean, I'm enjoying them. These are great.
Okay.
Yeah, so we did have a bunch, and some we're going to save for later because we like them a lot. We're going to get to two this time. The first one comes from Bryce, and it's a continuation of last week's podcast. He says that we mentioned that we would trade up to get in NL leagues to get Swanson or Rogers. So what would we be willing to give up in order to do this? Early pick next year, middle round pick? How would you, or assuming it's not too late, how would you go about getting Swanson or Rogers or trading for them after they've already been taken?
Yeah, so I think this was an interesting question that I apparently can't just say things without actually doing some research. And, you know, apparently there's a consequence to the things that I say on an open mic to the public. Well, one of these years I'll figure that out. So what he was asking is, like, what specifically, you know, how specifically can you trade up? And I thought the best way to do that would be to look at some of the values that players had last year in the draft or in this year's draft. One of the things we put together that we haven't really fully released is our average draft position for players. But I think it's very good at answering questions like this. So before I get to that, though, just Brendan Rodgers, I think we talked about him as a near star. And I think when you consider the fact that he's in Colorado, he's a top 10, top tier prospect in score sheet right now. I thought he was very comparable to Addison Russell. Addison Russell went with an average of the third pick last year. So if you have a 14th round pick, I think moving a 14th round pick and more is completely justifiable. Now, the problem with moving a 14th round pick is that, you know, some years a 14-3 is valuable. Some years it gets you Steven Souza, right? So you just never know, like, where that cutoff is going to be. But I think moving your 14th round pick for Rodgers, that's the kind of player you're hoping to get in the 14th round. With Swanson, or somebody who is, I would say, more of a 25 to 50 prospect, Swanson might actually even be a little lower. I was looking at the relative values, and so here is the average player taken in the 16th round. It's D. Gordon, A.J. Pollock, Tanner Roark, Kyle Hendricks, Mike Leake, Derek Norris, Martin Prado, Francisco Liriano, Craig Kimbrell, Jimmy Rollins. For me, that's about the level that I would trade for Swanson if I was a non-contender and I was looking for a prospect. The 15th round, by contrast, is Johnny Peralta, Will Myers, Carlos Martinez, Denard Span, Jay Bruce, Howie Kendrick, Daniel Murphy, Shelby Miller, Travis d'Arnaud, Josh Harrison. Obviously, not all those names are worth a 15th round pick anymore. But I would say, on average, I would probably want a little bit more back than a 15th rounder for Swanson. So I would trade a 15th rounder for Swanson plus a little something. So I think, you know, one of the things you can do if you have valuation questions like this, just save your drafts from previous years, look at them, and kind of help determine where the player should go. How's that?
That's a good answer. Thank you. And so let's get to our second question. It comes from John. John feels like his team is underperforming and wants our suggestions on how we would fill out his lineup card. If you want to follow along at home, he's Team 7 in BL Hall of Fame. I'll run through his batters real quick. Catching, he's got Yadier Molina, Yan Gomes, and Andrew Cusack. He's got Miguel Cabrera at first with John Singleton. He's got Brian Dozier at second with Jonathan Scope injured, and I'm only saying that just to prove that I know how to pronounce somebody's name. At third, he's got Matt Carpenter, Carlos Santana, and Ryan Rua. Short, he has Chris Owens, Brad Miller, Younghoe Kang, Carlos Correa. And the outfield, he's got this guy, Mike Trout, Andre Ethier, John Jay, Rios, Castillo, and Oswaldo Garcia.
Okay. I'm going to answer this question a little obliquely. So we got this question, and this team is 34 and 36. You know, you didn't go through the pitching staff, but a 3.41 ERA, which is, I guess it's third in a 16-team league. Right? So
his pitching staff has three Orioles starting pitchers. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong team now. Some team has three starting
pitchers. You might be looking less. You're possibly looking at the Orioles. You should not
do that. He's got Price and Kershaw, Carlos Martinez, Alex Wood, Garrett Richards, Kendall Grigman.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, so if your team is underperforming, I think the first thing you'd want to say is, wait, is that real? Jarrett, how many runs has...
I think we might have lost Ian.
Hello?
Yes, you're back.
Great. I hope that stays in. Jarrett, so the team has allowed 266 runs. How many runs has the team scored?
Oh, man. I don't know. One sec.
Got to be on this.
341.
So if a team is allowed 266 runs and scored 341,
that's pretty
and it's 34
good.
And 36, do you think the problem is that the lineup needs to be adjusted?
No.
Okay. Don't adjust your lineup. Just wait. Start buying.
Yeah, I mean, there might be other things you can do, but...
Yeah, fix the bullpen.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
We scored the second most runs in the league.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, presumably there could be some tweaks he could do, but I agree, it doesn't seem like that's a problem.
Right, you're just in bad luck, which sucks for you, but it'll be really good in the playoffs when you are a silent killer. That said, I think still worthy of going through the exercise, so what I would say is, you know, first place in the leadoff spot, you want somebody on base focused, obviously, who is a very strong hitter. I think that's Matt Carpenter. Number two, you would want your best hitter. That's Mike Trout. Number three, you probably want a slugging focused hitter, hopefully, who's the opposite hand, which for me might be Andre Ethier in the moment, or Carlos Santana. Number four, I think you'd want your second best player, which is Miguel Cabrera. I think you could actually reverse Cabrera and Trout, because that's pretty good. number five, whichever of Ethier and Santana you didn't want there. Number six, I would say, now you're probably descending by value, so I would say Brian Dozier. Number seven, you're going to want to go with, I guess, ideally you'd want to go crosshand, but I would actually have Correa there. Number eight, it looks like John Jay is your center fielder, so I would just stick with that. Or I would actually have Jay ninth, and I would put probably your catcher eighth, Yan Gomes or Yadier Molina, both of whom are more names than performance at the moment. But it's not your rough lineup. It's your underperforming roster.
Ian, can you talk a little bit about what would cause a team to have a good Pythagorean record but a poor result record?
In score sheet, I don't know if I can. I would say it's probably mostly luck.
Yeah. So, I mean, in real life, it's about 12. Sequencing one-run games and probably, like, close and late stuff, right?
Yeah, which I think it is here, too, but I just don't know if there's much you can do to influence that.
Yeah, it's 7-1 in one-run games. 7-12 in one-run games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is some of it. It's certainly not all. Some of it's sequencing.
So, I mean, if you were 500, that would be another two wins, maybe three, right?
Yeah. I mean, you might want to look at adding... I know Scoresheet, or I think Scoresheet to a degree, looks at RBIs and kind of contextual play, and then tries to interpret that. So maybe that's the problem. It doesn't seem like it, because I think... the players that I'm looking at seem to be fine in Roto format too. So I don't know.
Yeah. So I think the takeaway here is if you're concerned with the performance of your team, you have to start peeling back the layers, right? And the first layer is, in the score sheet universe, are they performing, is their record what we would expect based on like their run performance? And that's what you're getting at. If they're, like he's about a 500 team. Let's say he had allowed and scored about the same number of runs. It could also be that his score sheet performance was lagging in some way behind the real life performance, in which case the luck balancing will probably help him out.
Yeah.
And there's some things he could have done on the lineup card probably if the score sheet performance and the real life performance were about on par, but he still wasn't doing as well as he thought. So. Right, so I think his question was about the lineup card, but he was getting a step or two ahead of himself because his run performance had been pretty good, and that should have led to better outcomes.
Which I understand, because that's got to be super frustrating.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Is that it for the mailbag?
For this week, yep, but keep writing in.
Yep. Scoresheet at baseballperspectives.com. We have some questions. We'd love even more, even better questions. Take your questions to 11.
That's one more.
That's one more. All right, thank you. So why don't we pivot here? And we've done this a couple times in the past, just in case people haven't hung on our every word. We're going to talk about a couple players in each league who we are looking to trade for, who we think are good candidates to trade for in the moment, and a couple candidates in each league who we would, if they were on our team, we'd probably look to trade them away. And hopefully, even if we're not talking about your specific player on your team, some of the logic applies to you. And that's our justification for making this universal.
Plus, it's fun to pick out guys we like.
Yep, pretty much. With that, so, Ben, you had a decision to make about our order, right?
Yeah, so we're doing sells first and NL first. So the NL sell is the first category.
All right, why don't you lead us off, then?
All right, I'm going to lead us off with, fittingly enough, D. Gordon. D. Gordon strikes me as a good sell candidate because he is sporting a batting average on balls in play over 400. He has a terrible 3.2 walk percent, a fairly modest 15.2 K percent, and that's like walking and striking out as a percentage of plate appearances. He's also 291st in batted ball average velocity, which is a thing that we started talking about last time we brought this category. Kudos, Jared. That's like eighth lowest or something like that.
Did you know there were 290 other players?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's even filtering on a minimum of like 50 plate appearances or something. So there's other guys, obviously. But yeah, D. Gordon is super fast and gotten pretty lucky. And I don't want to own him when the luck runs out. So I would sell.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's reasonable. It's an interesting balance because you kind of want to save that 400, you know, the 400 batting average from the first month isn't really going anywhere for the playoffs. But who can argue with that, right?
Certainly not Peach.
But
well, so when you're trading him, you want to target a guy that's had strong in-season performance also, but is a little bit more likely to keep it up.
Right. And see if you can get multiple things. Because, right, if he's going to wreck your team in the second half, then you're not going to the playoffs with it anyway. Jared, who do you have?
So for my NL theme, I did themes for these things. So for okay. The NL sell, my theme is the pitchers that were high on the pitcher abuse leaderboard, which you can find at Baseball Prospectus. And so the first guy is Marco Estrada, who was a top. And then, to be clear, like, none of these pitchers are, oh my God, Dusty Baker's killing them sort of abuse, but they both were significantly higher than most other pitchers. So Estrada was atop the board, and it seems like he's a league average pitcher, which is good, but I think he's getting hype suggesting that he might be better than that, and he's had a couple good appearances recently, so I think it might be a good time to sell high on him.
And just, Marco Estrada is an NL player. Was he traded in like February or something?
Oh my God, I don't know. I just assumed. I shouldn't assume. That was a mistake.
I do think that trade came in late, so you might be in the clear on this one. If not, we've got a scoop for NL for NL owners. All right. While you're working on that, so kind of a similar story, but I think he's going to crash out even before he gets to be useful in the playoffs. I also think your team was probably not counting on a Danny Echevarria, and I'm sure there is some team out there that needs a shortstop. So, you know, if part of it is dealing from surplus, I think you can say, oh, I have a competent shortstop, and just try to squeeze for anything of value.
All right. Okay. You want me to hit my second one?
Yep, go for it.
Gerardo Parra. He's got a mm-hmm. high batting average on balls in play, which is one of the things I key off of for these lists. Out of a list of high BABIPs, I picked him out because he's had a declining walk rate the last five seasons. He still has some pretty good stats on the surface. and I think he's probably around keeper level in many formats. So you'll be able to get solid value when you sell him. This is maybe a little bit more of a long-term thing, but I feel like when you have a guy that's getting ready to decline and sort of fall out of keeper status, it's better to trade him a little bit too early than too late. We've talked a little bit about trades that we've made along those lines in the past, so I won't bore you with our nostalgia, but I think that's sort of generally a theme of how we try to approach player valuation and trade management.
Yeah, totally makes sense to me. Jared?
So it turns out Estrada's an AL player. Good job, me. I did a lot of research, clearly. The next guy I was going to go with... I'm saying Lance Lynn, who I did no research on, but was next up on the pitcher abuse leaderboard.
But it's definitely a Cardinal.
Definitely a Cardinal, and already hurt, so... there's that. And then Johnny Cueto was the other guy. His speed's down. He's got some elbow problems, and he's also near the top of the pitcher abuse leaderboard.
Yeah, go with Cueto. I like that.
Yeah, I like Cueto also.
Yeah. I watched Johnny Cueto pitch a doubleheader in Chicago.
No wonder his pitcher abuse points are so high.
Yeah. Well, he thought he pitched both ends. He very nearly pitched both ends of the doubleheader. He came out in the ninth inning of a game that they were up 6-0. I believe he came out with 119 pitches to start the inning. And strangely, he hasn't been right since. But it's not like they've been trying to trade him for value or anything. My next candidate to trade away, I'm going to go with a high-profile player, Matt Duffy of the San Francisco Giants. If you haven't checked your team to see if you owe Matt Duffy yet, to find out who Matt Duffy is. So Duffy kind of sees the job from Casey McGee when it turns out that Casey McGee could not play. I think he's been doing pretty well with it. This is more of a case where... I would say you should look for locking in certainty on some of these surprising players. That rather than, rather than just accept Matt Duffy's fortune as your own, see if you can turn that into something more permanent or, a need that you perhaps have elsewhere. Because I'm guessing that Matt Duffy was not your starting third baseman when you started the season. All right.
Yeah, so now we're buying in the NL.
Okay.
I'm going to buy Gio Gonzalez again. We had sort of talked about this a little bit, but Gio Gonzalez is one of the guys that I've touted previously. And all of the good reasons to buy Gio Gonzalez before apply now. I think he's been pretty good, but not certainly as great at preventing runs as some of his peripherals would indicate. So I think he's going to get even better. And if you can trade like a number two or number three starter and get Gio Gonzalez in the process, I think you'll end up happy, not just at the end of this year, but probably around this time next year too. He's a solid guy and has been pitching pretty well the last couple of years, obviously.
Sure. Jared?
So in my buy candidates with NL and AL, I looked for bench players on teams that are... looking to be teams that are selling so they could find more playing time. So none of these are really super big name guys, but maybe you could gamble a little and get some bonus playing time out of them. So the first guy is Darren Ruff. He should pick up outfield eligibility soon, and he seems like a semi-useful guy who will be big average-ish.
Interesting.
Is he on the Phillies still?
Barely.
And you're assuming that the Phillies are going to trade somebody so he can play?
I said it was a gamble. I didn't say it was going to happen.
And that's not just... start Dominic Brown of the 200 on-base percentage in AAA fame ahead of him. For instance.
I just like making fun of the Phillies.
Who doesn't?
Take that, Phillies fans.
Ben, how dare you name a player who you named last month? We need to, vary our choices. I'm going to name a player who I named last month as well. So I felt very smart last month when I took Jason Hayward, and all of a sudden he started hitting again. I think that was probably your last chance to get Jason Hayward on the cheap. But just in case anyone is unaware, Jason Hayward's hitting the heck out of the ball for the last 3 weeks.
We heart Jason Hayward.
Yeah, there are some best fans of baseball who can tell you this is your last chance. It's interesting because Hayward is in the NL and he's a free agent at the end of the season. But, you know, since this is the best organization in baseball, they have a good track record of re-signing their free agents. And I think, that's a risk that you can either mention and hope to take. Ben, what say you?
My second guy is... Oh, no, I'm going to butcher this name again. Mike Foltynewicz. Did I get it?
Nailed it.
Yes!
Well done.
So...
Drop the mic.
I've got a couple of good stories to tell. Otherwise, I might drop the mic and walk away. So, Foltynewicz first popped up on my radar when I was looking for guys because he's got pretty good fastball velocity. And then I was looking into him a little bit more, and he's got pretty good swing and whiff rates. I was looking at the PitchFX leaderboards at Baseball Prospectus, which are an invaluable tool in general, but especially helpful for stuff like this. And when I poked around a little bit more, I noticed that some of his recent transactions include being demoted to AAA. He had some control issues coming up through the minors, but was decent at not walking the park in his stints in the majors earlier this year. Thanks to some help from Ian, I am now aware that he got demoted because he was torn up a couple of times through the rotation, and then the Braves were fortunate enough to be able to acquire Bronson Arroyo. and so I think now is probably a good buy low opportunity for Foltynewicz, and I'm optimistic for his future given his tools, and hopefully the stuff will keep him in the Braves rotation next year.
All right, Jared, what's up?
If you own a team where you get Ben's player, you have to call your team Faulty Towers. Faulty Towers.
Do you also have to? Do you also have to draft Josh Towers?
Yes. My next guy is on the Brewers. Fun fact about the Brewers is that they just barely have one more game since they are out of first place. and I'm going to go with Shane Peterson, who's got a few notches better than average defense for a corner outfielder. And if he slightly beats the projected rest of the season stats, he'll be league average hitter. And I think you can get him pretty cheaply now.
I was trying to come up with a good pun alternative for Foltynewicz, and I was thinking if you had him and Tuffy Ghost Witch, you could name your team something like Which Witch is Which.
Hmm.
Okay. Alright, we'll workshop that. So in the meantime, I am going to suggest a player who I believe I've never had on a fantasy team. But maybe this is your chance to get Matt Cain. Cain is going to come back to the rotation next week. I usually argue that this is a good time to trade players away. I think that's probably true of another player who I'll be mentioning next time. But because we're going backwards, I will offer my reasoning backwards. with Cain, I think he is kind of at a local minimum in value. That, I think there's a chance that, there's a chance you could get him as a one-year player. I think there's a equally likely chance that he is a one-year player at this point in his career. I think there's a little bit of upside, and
I at least like his chances to finish out the season in that train wreck of a rotation. Oh, right. And also, he's going to go down for Tommy John surgery at some point. So I think you can get him really cheap for the rest of the season. Hopefully. And if not, you know, don't bother if people are still hung up on the name.
All right.
Are we moving over to the AL now?
Yes, selling in the AL. So I'm going to take a guy close to home, literally the Detroit Tigers, Anthony Gose. He is sporting a 367 BABIP, an 092 ISO, walks in 5% of his plate appearances and strikes out in over 25% of his plate appearances, all of which stack up to sell. All the alarms are going off for me. Yeah. Get rid of Anthony Gose.
Okay. Kind of agreed. Jared?
So for my AL tradeaways, I went for pitchers who are near or at the top of the hard hit percentage leaderboard in the wrong way. So they get hit hard. Hardly. Mm-hmm. Should be an adverb. I don't know. but so the
they hardly
the
get
first
hit?
Guy I'm going... Yeah.
Oh, wait. Sorry, go ahead. Jared?
Is my first guy. He's good. A lot of balls hit hard off of him. His peripherals are better than his ERA, which is true. So his ERA may go down, which makes it easier to sell him to somebody. But that 4.0 ERA is banked for the playoffs if and when you get there. And so I think he's also getting a lot of good press and hype, and I think you can use that to sell.
Who was
it? Yeah. Carlos Carrasco, right?
Yes.
That's interesting. Yeah, he might be a player whose reputation is running ahead of his performance to date, especially in scoring.
Yeah. And not a bad player. I'm not saying he's going to implode or anything.
Yeah, so along similar lines, the first player on my list is Robinson Cano. But Ian, you might say, in the car, or while working out, or, I don't know, at your desk. I don't know where you listen to this thing. I don't know why you listen to this thing, much less where. But you might say, like, isn't he at a local, like, or isn't he, like, the ultimate buy low candidate right now? And I agree with that. Like, I don't think he's going to end the season as the worst hitter in baseball. But a couple of things. One, every other second baseman this side of Eric Sogard is out hitting him. So you have a chance to get, you have a chance to get, there are about 10 or 11 second basemen who you can get more value for. And second, I still think the name Robinson Cano is going to mean something. Like, people might think, oh, this is my chance to get him, you know, and hope for the bounce back, which is true. I mean, that's very true. And so, you know, for you, you just want to make sure you're not selling him for too little. But is his 2016 going to be all that great? You know, that one more year of this and he is not a successful major league player anymore. You're not going to be able to trade him for anything.
Yeah, and it's not like it'd be unheard of for a second baseman to have a pretty steep collapse, especially around his age.
Yeah.
He's historically been very durable, but the position is something he's fighting against.
Right. My belief is that he's going to bounce back very soon after this to become an above-average player and is going to be that for a couple of years. But I still think that player is somewhat overrated in, you know, the spotlight. So I would say trade him now and to somebody who thinks that they are getting him at a steal. How's that?
All right.
Interesting.
My second sell candidate is a great combination of those two. It's Jason Kipnis. Jason Kipnis has been doing quite well, especially in terms of a lot of his slash line performance. I think this is maybe the Jason Kipnis that all of his biggest fans hoped to see. And I'm in favor of selling him basically because I feel like we're probably at the peak of his value. He's 28 already. He's been in the league a little bit longer than you might realize. And like we mentioned, second basemen tend to fall apart younger than, say, like corner outfielders or, you know, other infield positions. He's also sporting a high BABIP, which means some of his in-season results could come back to earth a little bit. And I think those two things sort of combined to make me feel like if I own Jason Kipnis now, it's about when I would try to move him and try to capture as much of that value as I could.
Yeah, makes sense to me. Jared, who do you got?
Phil Hughes. He's near the top of the Hard Hit leaderboard. He's older than I realized. His 29th birthday was yesterday. So belated birthday, Phil. His strikeouts, walks, and homers are all trending in the wrong direction, and he's lost about a mile an hour on his pitches.
So you would suggest not putting that in the email to the league?
I mean, you could if you wanted. You could instead point out his 3.52 ERA last year. That might be better.
I like the reverse psychology approach. so I was saying with the Matt Cain comment that I usually like trading away players as they're about to come back. Matt Moore is about to come back.
Yeah. Matt Moore.
Ben, cover your ears for this section.
Oh, no!
Are we convinced that Matt Moore was ever all that good?
Yes!
Ooh. Those are fighting words.
Bro. How are you going to do me like that?
this might result in the fist fight. I think there's a chance that Matt Moore, you know, he definitely has some raw ability. There is some part of him somewhere that was rated ahead of Mike Trout, and Bryce Harper, seemingly more and more inexplicably by the day. But he's always had a problem with command. Command is the last thing to come back. You know, I would either wait for him to trade him now or maybe wait for him to come back and make a start and then look to move him. But I feel like Matt Moore still has more value on the market than he does on your team.
Gross.
Even the healthy version.
Boo Earns.
So, other than my obviously terrible advice, you're trading for Matt Moore.
Yes!
Who else are you trading for?
Give me more Matt Moore! I am also trading for another guy that you're trading away, Michael Pineda. Michael Pineda is not exactly a healthy guy in general. And as much as health is a skill, which might be the most important thing that I learned from reading Will Carroll at any point. it's okay to laugh out loud. I love Will, but you know. So Pineda's fragile, and I think that's going to help you when you want to acquire him, because you can basically bake in as much of a discount as you'll talk his owner into. And his owner is probably, like Ian, is hoping to capture some of the value that he's shown so far. So it's a gamble. It's a gamble, but he's striking a bunch of guys out. And I think his performance for the season to date is going to be really helpful for as long as he's healthy. He's even got a little bit high BABIP, so it could get a little bit better, at least in terms of run prevention. And so basically the only gamble for Pineda is, you know, will he stay healthy? And if you can get his price lowered enough to account for that risk, then I think it's worth acquiring him.
All right. I mean, I think that's fine. So Ben was alluding to the fact that I said last month that the injury concerns were, scared me. But I think the secret trick for a lot of these players is it takes two teams to make a trade. And so, it does depend on what – it always depends on what you get back for someone. Like, sometimes the trade for and trade away just means, like, pay special interest to this player. You know, that they are more volatile than the average player, let's say. And thus might be an interesting trade candidate either way.
Sure.
Yeah.
Jared, who do you have?
I'm not saying that the White Sox are throwing in the towel in the season, but hypothetically, if they were to decide to do that at some point, even though we know that they're going to reel off about 20 wins in a row,
nope.
You could consider trying to get Gordon Beckham. He could be in line for more playing time. He's going to get positive BABIP regression. He's got above average defense. Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, I'm not saying like great player Gordon Beckham, but you can get him pretty cheap as a guy for your bench.
Yeah.
Yep.
Real cheap.
Yep. Or anyone else. Literally the whole list. I mean, you don't have to trade for my least favorite player in baseball, but if you do, it's a decision. Well, I'm gonna pick a player who I think a lot of other people are very disappointed by. I think now's the perfect time to trade for Ruzne Castillo. I think people are really worried about whether he could play baseball. I'm mildly concerned, but you know, I would also like him to not be jerked around for more 3 weeks at a time, and just you know, see if he's a player. I'm willing to float that, and even give up some real value to try to take a chance on Ruzne. I think the upside is pretty high still. And, you know, they can't mess around with Shane Victorino forever. I guess they benched him for Jackie Bradley Jr., which... Also trade for Jackie Bradley Jr. Just trade for every Red Sox who every Red Sox fan has been disappointed with.
Mookie Betts!
You can't go... I said Mookie Betts last month. Mookie
I know, Betts I has, almost said Mookie Betts again.
Mookie Betts has been on a rocket ship. I was pretty on point last month, people. Just listen to the last month's podcast and just ignore this one. Or just assume whenever I'm fading out, I'm talking about a player who's much more interesting than the one I'm actually talking about while you hear me. Ben, who's your second pick?
My second pick is Jeff Samardzija.
Oh, God. You guys are just, like, taunting me now, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, so he's had a somewhat high BABIP, which is how he showed up on my radar when I was looking for these guys. But a little bit like Foltynewicz, he's got strong velocity and decent peripherals. I think he's maybe a little bit under the radar now, especially with Chris Sale in the same rotation, which, you know, buy Chris Sale too if you can. But, I think Samardzija will return decent value, especially if he ever gets traded as part of the fire sale and goes to maybe a little bit even better park for flyball pitchers. It's possible that maybe the Padres will be looking to make some moves and try to salvage their crazy season, and then, you know, now all of a sudden Samardzija's like pitching like a number two starter.
That's a really interesting idea. I like the idea of the two most disappointing teams in baseball just trading each other. I hope we get Matt Kemp out of it.
Oh God.
Yeah, well, you definitely pick players who frustrate their local fans.
Matt Kemp for Jeff Samardzija. Who says no?
Probably
the White Sox.
The White Sox say no. Yeah. I don't even think hard about that.
Yeah.
Matt Kemp for Ryan Howard. Who says no?
Everybody?
The world. Jared, who do you have next?
My last guy is Mark Canha on the A's. He should get outfield eligibility soon. He's got... 8 homers in about 200 plate appearances. So he's got some pop. And seems like he's the type of person who the A's are going to could figure out how to get a lot more playing time. He's like top 30 in the AL and ISO. So he could be a good righty off the bench.
Jared, how dare you think that the A's are not going to compete and are instead going to trade away all their useful players and pick scrubs?
Sorry.
Assuming that the A's are going to trade away their useful players and pick scrubs. So I am saying Drew Pomeranz, who was exiled to the bullpen about a month ago. I assume that he's a Scott Kazmir away from going back into the rotation. I know that the A's have been hot of late and are climbing back into the race and happen to be an actually good team. I think Billy Beane still ignores all that and pulls the ripcord on this year's team sooner rather than later. And I think Pomeranz goes back into the rotation, possibly for Kazmir, possibly for Jesse Chavez, because he seems to think Chavez gets tired all the time. I still believe enough to give him one more chance, and I think he could get a reasonable number four playoff starter out of it. Nice. All right. Did we crushed that one.
Yeah.
Yay.
Nailed it.
Yeah, definitely don't hold us accountable for this.
I feel like we need some kind of disclaimer that we read off really fast at the end about how, advice is not binding and all that. Some type of legal commercial.
Sure. If we, if anyone listening to this is a lawyer and or the Micro Machines guy, hit us up.
Or hell, if you know the Micro Machines guy.
That's right. We'll take 2 degrees. That's yeah. Right. All right. So with that, so Ben, what's the best thing you saw this week?
Oh man. Okay. I mean, I'll go first. You might regret asking me to go first, but I'll go first.
Oh,
No. It's fine. Okay. I'm usually terrible at this, so you're playing your odds right. So, knowing that I'm terrible at this, I have started a list in my phone of things that I've seen that week that might be the best thing that I saw this week.
I hope everybody at home is doing the same.
So, the first thing that might be the best thing that I saw this week is my list of things that I saw this week.
I hope it's just like everything you saw this week, like rainbow.
It's not. There's only 5 things on the list. So the other day, I'm going to do it in order of worst to first. So the other day I was watching some MLB highlights and I saw the Josh Donaldson diving into the stands play. Have you guys seen this?
No.
Yeah.
This catch is ridiculous. It makes the Derek Jeter like falling into the stands catch look like he's a big pansy. Donaldson does like full sprint, leaping timed dive like 6 rows into the stands to catch this ball. It's amazing. So if you haven't seen it, go see that. Before I had seen that, I was thinking that I was going to use A-Rod's 3000th hit. It's happened recently. Obviously, I'm a big A-Rod supporter, a big fan. I love that he was able to do this, and I hope that he continues to be successful. It bothers me that he's having this success for the Yankees because it's like hard to actively root for him, but I do it anyway. The third best thing that I saw this week was Inside Out, the movie. It was very good. I endorse it.
Don't spoil it.
I won't spoil it except for to say that it's classic Pixar in its appeal to kids and adults. It was fun being in the theater with kids and adults and hearing like the kids laugh at some things that the adults just like didn't even laugh at, and the adults laugh at some things that they, like, totally went over the kids' heads.
And everyone sobbed
throughout. There was not as much crying as in some other Pixar movies.
Okay.
So up until this morning, the thing that I was convinced was going to be the best thing I saw this week has to do with some time that I spent yesterday morning. So as I mentioned here, I help coach the University of Michigan Women's Club Ultimate Frisbee team. And during the summer, they help volunteer at some stuff around the campus at the University of Michigan. And one of the things that they volunteer at is a function where a bunch of middle schoolers from different parts of New York, and I think most of the folks that they're middle schoolers, most of the kids were from Manhattan, I think, but there were definitely a few kids from like the Bronx and Queens, and so my New York geography is terrible.
Those are all boroughs.
The important thing is they're from New York, and we were teaching them how to play frisbee, which is good, and like I feel good about volunteering to help. One of these guys was wearing a Yankees shirt, and the Yankees shirt happened to have the number 13 on the back. So we were sort of like in between things, and I was making casual conversation with a middle schooler, as you do. I said, oh, are you a big Yankees fan? He's like, yeah, I like the Yankees. I was like, oh, so you're a big A-Rod fan. And he sort of looks at me and he does the, like, the thing that dogs do when you make a funny noise and they tilt their head to the side. In our house, we call it the schnauzer head tilt. But you know what I'm talking about. He does the, like, perplexed head tilt thing. And I say, A-Rod? He's like I say it again, like maybe he didn't hear me. He's like, huh? Who's A-Rod? And, like, 3 seconds went by while I caught my breath and picked my jaw off the ground. And I was like, well, you know the name on the back of your jersey is Rodriguez. He's like, oh, yeah, number 13. And I'm thinking, huh? He's like, oh, yeah, I just like it because it's number 13. And I thought to myself, this is the perfect story of what Yankees fandom is to me. Because here's this guy wearing the shirt of an all-time great player who is probably the one Yankee that I've ever felt good about rooting for, and he has no idea who that guy is. He's just wearing it because it's a Yankee shirt and it's number 13.
Did you ask him how he felt about PEDs?
No. We did not get into a fun, deep discussion about what it means to cheat in baseball.
Hot take, middle schooler. Okay, I know, go ahead.
I appreciate that your hatred of the Yankees goes so deep that you're willing to rag on a middle schooler. That's fantastic.
It was pretty great. I wish you had been there in person because, you know, the interaction itself was probably even more hilarious to witness than to participate in. The reason that is not the best thing that I saw this week is because this afternoon I signed an agreement to buy a house. I saw the house this morning. So Christina and I have been looking for houses to buy. We're getting married. We're looking to settle down. And the house buying process is kind of crazy. And it's one of those things that it seems to me there should be some, like, class that you take after school in high school or some, like, extracurricular thing in college where they're, like, teaching you all the things that you need to know in life that you don't learn in class because it has nothing to do with, like, macroeconomic theory.
Sure. Lesson one, who is A-Rod? Lesson two, how do you buy a house?
So,
all you need.
So you have to do a whole bunch of things, but in our area, there's a bunch of houses available on the market, and you have to sort of snatch them up kind of quickly because the good ones we have found have offers put on them fairly quickly. There have been two or three houses already that we wanted to see that we couldn't get to see because before we made time to see them, an offer was accepted. So we had been going once a week, and we decided to start going, like, every couple of days. So I went out this morning looking at some houses, and this one is one that Christina had picked out. And she was in clinic this morning, so she was busy, but I really liked it and ended up calling her and paging her, and she came on her lunch break to come see it. She really liked it, so we talked to the realtor, and she put in an offer shortly after lunch, and the offer was accepted. So now we have a whole bunch of, like, hassle and paperwork and all that other, you know, administrative garbage. But I'm going to own a house, which is cool. So that's the best thing that I saw this week.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm going to wait to say congratulations just until everything is signed. But I'm very happy for you.
I appreciate that, Jared. I appreciate the sentiment and the restraint. It's good.
That's cool. How far away is it from where you live now?
It's pretty close. So we live in Livonia. Christina works in Livonia. We spend a decent amount of time in Ann Arbor. She has to go to Ann Arbor once or twice a week for work. I go to Ann Arbor all the time. So it's like halfway closer to Ann Arbor, sort of in between Livonia and Ann Arbor. So sometime in August, hopefully, knock on wood, etc. Instead of joining, as always, from Livonia, I'll be joining as new from Plymouth, Michigan.
Well, I'm going to get that wrong.
That's fine.
Coming to us, as always, from somewhere in Michigan.
Yes, that's fine.
Okay.
All right.
Jared, what's the best thing you saw this week?
Well, I can't top buying a house. That's a tough one.
I bought two houses. What are you talking about?
So I got two things real quick. First is a hot take on the women's soccer team. It should have been, no.
It's in now.
As it's
gone, so they won their first elimination game against Columbia 2-0 earlier this week. They're going to be playing on Friday as this goes up. They're playing Friday at 7:30. Against China. Everybody should watch. But if you've, like I assume everybody is, if you're following any of the analysis of the team, pretty much everyone universally hates the U.S. Women's soccer team. and says they're playing a style that just is old-fashioned and all the other teams are passing them by, and how it's just ludicrous and how they're going to lose by a million goals because they're so playing so terribly, and how the coach, Gilles, just has no idea what she's doing tactically. And, I mean, that is fair. They're playing a really ugly game to watch, I got to say, and certainly they could be beating these teams by more, but my hot take is that I kind of think that there's room to disagree with these people. So the U.S.'s strong point is their forwards. They've got probably the top four forwards in the world, and the top goalie in the world.
Jay, you cut out for me. Is it just me? Ian, are you there?
Creative, but if you've got an incredible defensive line and if you've got the best forwards, I think a long ball strategy straight up just plays exactly to your strengths, and it's not fun to watch, but it's clearly working, and I think maybe people are getting a little too upset about the lack of strategy. So that's my hot take of the U.S. women's team as they proceed to lose by 4 goals to China on Friday. But so the best thing I saw was I went to a Bethesda Big Train game this past Friday. Bethesda Big Train, of course, play in the Cal Ripken Collegiate Baseball League. It's like the Cape Cod League, except in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. And the players who go on to the majors from this league include Joe Smith and Brett Cecil and Steven Schmoll. So the cream of the crop, really. But I got to tell you, I don't know why I've never gone. It was a fantastic place to see a game. The Big Train is the marquee franchise of the league. They've got their own stadium. I mean, it seats like, 500 people or whatever, but it's a gorgeous place to watch a game. And of course, there wasn't a foul ball that came anywhere close to me, even though it was 4 rows from the field. But so the reason that I went to the game was because it was a Cal Ripken bobblehead giveaway.
Naturally.
So it's unfortunate that we're not doing video for this call, because it sort of ruins the punchline for this one, because I'm now holding my Cal Ripken
video up. We can see you until it matters.
But so what you guys may not know is that the Cal Ripken Collegiate Baseball League was not named for Cal Jr., but it was in fact named for its father, Cal Sr. The bobblehead they gave away was a Cal Ripken Sr. bobblehead. So I have lots of junior bobbleheads, but this is the first I have of his dad. I'm very excited about it. It's a pretty good likeness, I gotta say.
Do you have any bobbleheads of Cal's mother, perhaps getting kidnapped and or escaping kidnappies?
No, that'd be pretty good. Yes, maybe I should look into that.
All right. Or at least a Billy Ripken bobblehead.
A Billy. I should get a Billy.
With appropriate language on the bat.
Obviously.
All right. So, then, I'm actually, unlike you, I did not buy a house. but like you, so I was interested this week. There, I feel like there was a story that was underreported out there. That was interesting to hear about this quest for 3,000, and someone who has been perhaps criticized for this. No one thought it would ever be possible at a certain point, that it was crazy, that it shows the sign of some obsessive mental illness, perhaps. But persevered and managed to accomplish it. I'm talking, of course, that this week I scored my 3,000th baseball game.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Wow. I'm speechless.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, mental illness, that's a weird thing to pin on A-Rod.
I knew it was going to be A-Rod, but I was not going to guess that. Wow, 3,000 is a lot, I got to say.
It's a lot. 2,000 came 5 years ago, so it's been a while.
So I've been thinking about it. I watch games pretty fast. You know, I wouldn't say anyone should watch a baseball game with me for a variety of reasons at home. But
I can attest to that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, live games I tend to watch at the same pace as everybody else. I'll clarify there. I have not, in fact, invented a time machine to watch baseball games more quickly. But when I'm at home alone, I will speed through everything that is not a pitch. So I haven't quite hit the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours thing, I would think. Mm-hmm. But certainly more than healthy or recommended. Yeah, it's quite an achievement.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. I'm certainly not proud, but I guess I'm saying it anyway. If you people don't understand, there's no hope for me. So I also log my game. So I actually do know that. It doesn't take that long, I promise. Don't, you know, tell people. So you'd ask, like, what is the, what's the game that did it? Of course, it is the, Saturday's Marlins-Reds game that the Marlins won 8-1. You want to make it special. Right?
I mean, there wasn't any other impressive game on Saturday, so...
No, certainly not. None that I would score anyway. Yeah, so while you guys were watching Max Scherzer throw a no-hitter, I was also watching that, thanks, Derek, but I then went on to watch another game on Archive. This was... the most notable thing about it was that it was... Justin Nicolino's debut in the major leagues. Justin Nicolino, in case you don't know him well, came over from the Blue Jays in the Jose Reyes deal, Mark Burley deal that now looks atrocious and perhaps did not at the time. But he was traded along with a couple pitchers, one of whom was Anthony DeSclafani. Anthony DeSclafani, of course, was traded in the offseason to the Reds. Anthony DeSclafani was the opposing pitcher tonight. Nicolino and Anthony DeSclafani are best friends. Anthony DeSclafani was his roommate last year. And they faced each other for the first time. A couple of things I learned. Anthony DeSclafani's nickname is Disco, which is nice. Fantastic. That's a winner. Good job, baseball people. They had an awkward hug before the game or something. Justin Nicolino, the first hit he allowed as a professional was to Anthony DeSclafani, which I think covers the Red season in a nutshell. But the best thing I saw this week, other than myself, was that, I watch a lot of debuts, but I'm sure you guys have seen player debuts before where the guy goes into the stands to interview the parents. And Justin Nicolino's parents were, suitably excited, but they pulled over the sideline reporter, Craig Minervini, right before the game. And before they asked anything, the first thing Justin Nicolino's mother said is, so what's his pitch count?
Wow.
And as a loyal baseball prospectus reader for 15 years, to understand that pitch count has gone from this horrifying concept of abuse and, like, ignorance where there were actual battles being fought and people saying, that players today are babies, and that it's managed to pervade the mainstream to the degree that somebody's mother would pull over a sideline reporter to say, you know, what's my son's pitch count? As though that is the most important thing in the game. Certainly the best thing I saw this week. His pitch count, by the way, about 30 after three innings when that was called, and he left the game with a tidy 85 pitches through seven. A great day for Justin Nicolino. All right. Now I'm going to go watch another sport where very tall men get drafted and shake hands with a much shorter man. Can't wait to see how that goes. In the meantime, anything else from you guys?
Nope.
Good to go?
Yeah.
All right. It's been a pleasure, as always. On behalf of Ben Murphy and Jared Weiss, I mean Lefkowitz, thanks again, and have a great day.
Three true outcomes, they want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes, insightful baseball news underway. Three true outcomes, come on out to the ballpark and play. Three true outcomes, Ian, Ben, and Jared. Scoresheet baseball can be tricky if you don't possess the edge. They'll call it the way they see it, you'll rarely hear them hedge. They each possess the knowledge, honed from years of play. You want to win at Scoresheet, you're going to want to stay with three true outcomes. They want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes, insightful baseball news underway. Three true outcomes, come on out to the ballpark and play. Three true outcomes, the number one independent score sheet podcast in the USA.